AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. And right now we're joined by Patrick Coulican. He is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Latest in Minnesota news and politics, make sure you go over to minnesotareformer.com. As today we'll be talking about a number of topics, including who could be running in the now open 1st Congressional District to replace the late Jim Hagedorn. And we'll also be talking about Minnesota now having more than $9 billion budget surplus. Patrick, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Always a pleasure, Brett.
Yeah, so let's talk about this budget surplus because, as Ricardo Lopez wrote today, Minnesota lawmakers now have more than $9 billion available to spend after Minnesota's Management and Budget Office published a new forecast showing an estimated surplus of $9.3 billion, which is even bigger than the prior surplus we were expected to have. So how did we end up in this place where now we have even more money to spend than we thought we had before, which was still quite a bit of money?
Well, the biggest unexpected increase came from the corporate franchise tax, which is essentially a corporate income tax. And that tells you that Minnesota's robust corporate sector is doing really quite well. Not surprising because our economy has been really resilient through this, through the pandemic. We have a very diverse, kind of well-textured economy, a lot of big, very profitable companies. And so they're doing well. But income and sales taxes were also up. This is just a strong, diverse economy. And then also the fourth income tax tier that was put in place during the 2013 legislative session, that was Governor Mark Dayton's really chief policy victory, I think, in definitely in his first term. That brought in, captured a lot of income tax from the wealthiest Minnesotans, and those folks are doing very well, again, during the pandemic. And so you wind up with this really significant surplus. And then, of course, the federal government has also played some role there as well.
Of course, the DFL and the GOP have differing ideas on how to spend and possibly give that money back to taxpayers. And really the biggest difference as I look at it is that the DFL side, at least led by Governor Tim Walz, is, well, announcing one-time payments, or Walz bucks, if we hearken back to the term Jesse bucks of the early 2000s, where Walz is proposing, oh, he's actually increased his proposal now to $500 for individuals and $1,000 for couples. Meanwhile, on the Republican side, they are proposing reducing the first income tax tier from 5.35% to 2.8%. And what's interesting about this is that the Republicans are proposing a permanent change, while Democrats are now proposing what's more of a one-time change. And if you make these permanent changes, at least in my opinion, that could come back to bite you when you don't have as good of an economic time. So it's interesting to see how both of the parties are kind of taking their own approach to how to spend this $9 billion.
Right. There's an old idea amongst conservatives called starving the beast. And essentially what they found was they had this idea with Ronald Reagan that they wanted to cut the size of government. But they actually like a lot of government programs. So what you do is you just cut taxes and then you reduce revenue, and then it forces government to get smaller. And so that's kind of what's at play here, where they would like to cut taxes permanently, and that would, over time, even after the surplus is long gone, then it really restricts government's ability to provide services that Republicans don't think should be provided. And so that's kind of their plan. It has a very structural, strategic, long-term vision here to cut the size of government. Even though, you know, we have a surplus now, the idea is when there's a recession and we have now we have to deal with a budget by contrast, Democrats want to give a one-time amount of money, which is, you know, you can call it a political ploy, or you can say it's a good cash infusion that people need during this inflationary time, or in a time of rising gas prices or what have you. but Walz has proposed to really give out a pretty substantial amount of money. They want to call it Walz checks, which is kind of brilliant politics. Republicans are saying, well, it shouldn't be called Walz checks, but everybody knows it's going to be called Walz checks. And then also, of course, Walz wants to increase funding for education, housing, transportation, some of the traditional Democratic areas where they like to see more robust government investment. So that's kind of the breakdown. This being an election year, it's hard to know if there'll be any agreement between in the divided legislature.
And as you had a chance to write about the differing ideas with Republicans and Democrats on how to spend this budget surplus, I liked what you wrote about when you talked about how this idea of cutting the income tax rate, while it might be appealing on the surface, it's really not all that progressive of a tax break. And you talked about how really if we were to implement a much more progressive tax break in the state, it would be something along the lines of having a reduction in sales tax. So talk a little bit about that, because I think that is something that's often missed when we get into the debate talking about tax cuts and how they can possibly stimulate the economy.
Right. Well, Republicans have proposed cutting the lowest income tax tier in half. And that sounds appealing. You think, oh, well, you know, people who make the least amount of money are getting a tax cut. Well, actually, everybody gets a tax cut because everybody who makes, if you make $100,000, you're still paying in that income tax bracket for your first $40,000 or so. So it's a tax break for everybody, including the richest Minnesotans. But if you only make $30,000, then you don't get the full benefit of that. And in fact, if you really want to give tax relief to working people, the best way is through the sales tax, because working people are spending most of their money. They don't have enough for savings, and they pay sales tax on a lot of that. So they're paying, as a percentage of their income, they're paying more in sales taxes. And so if you really want a progressive tax cut, it's cut the sales tax. Of course, Republicans are not going to want to do that. They are solely interested in income tax, and especially directed at the wealthy. I mean, they think there's an economic case to be made that when you cut taxes on the wealthy, the money winds up getting invested. That's been been tried a lot in the last 40 years or so, and it's arguable whether or not it delivers the kind of prosperity it's promised.
Speaking with Patrick Coolican, he is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Make sure you go to minnesotareformer.com for the latest in Minnesota news and politics. I know a big topic that was debated late in 2021, as we talked about possibly having a special session, is how to distribute money for essential workers who, of course, had to bear the brunt of the pandemic, especially back in the earlier days. I haven't heard this talked about much recently as the regular session has now started. Has there been any word on what could be happening with this essential worker pay, especially now that we have an even bigger budget surplus than we anticipated before?
Yeah, there's the House passed the Democratic controlled House passed a plan that would give a really significant amount. I think it's $1,500 to the 600,000 so workers. Who were 667,000 workers, I think it is, who are kind of considered essential workers. They're the ones who put themselves at risk during the pandemic. And so that's sort of the Democratic plan. The Republicans wanted to make it a much smaller pool of workers. They had kind of singled out workers like that are basically favored interest groups of theirs, like healthcare, long-term care. Those are two of their favorites, and prison guards, another one of their favorites. They were looking to exclude a lot of workers, including meatpacking plant workers, who were really at very high risk. And the Republicans have not touched this subject. What the Republicans and the want, and what Tim Walz has actually proposed, is to put money back into the unemployment insurance fund. Which we need to do. We owe the federal government that. And if we don't, by a date, I believe it's coming up here in early March, payroll taxes would increase to cover that. So this could be a trade situation where we refill the unemployment insurance coffers, which actually is a, I think, a good progressive move because that's an important safety net program, the unemployment insurance. And then in exchange, the Democrats get this bonus pay for essential workers who, put themselves at risk during the pandemic. So there's a possible compromise there. Of course, it is an election year, so can't really rule anything out as far as stalemate goes.
Yeah, we'll have to see as they get closer to the deadline if that possible deal and trade-off does become a reality. One more topic I wanted to talk about with you, and that, of course, is the now open 1st Congressional District as the late Jim Hagedorn unfortunately passed away a few weeks ago. So now, of course, both parties are going to be looking at fielding candidates to run in a special election, which will take place on August 9th, which is interesting because that's the same date as the statewide primary election. So ballots could be a little confusing down in the 1st Congressional District come August and in November. But talking about who might be running for this seat, on the Democratic side, we of course had some big news with Dan Feehan, who has been the Democratic candidate for the past two cycles, announcing he won't run. Meanwhile, on the Republican side, there are rumors that former state party chair Jennifer Carnahan, who of course is the wife of Jim Hagedorn, might be seeking that seat. Let's at least start off on the Republican side, Patrick, because the idea of Carnahan running for office makes some sense, being that she was the wife of Jim Hagedorn, but of course she also does have a lot of political baggage if we go back and look at some of the scandals that the party endured during her time, including the Lazaro scandal.
I mean, she's certainly a carpetbagger as well. She doesn't live in the district, never lived in the district. She did apparently caucus there, and it's pretty clear that she's running because she's been asked about it and won't comment. So it just leads you to believe that if she is running, because if she wasn't, I think she would just deny that she's running. There's also talk about her having already started hiring operatives. But as you said, there's a lot of baggage there. I mean, she's really said a lot of stuff in the just in the public. She's been a very public person. And as you mentioned, close to this GOP operative, now former operative and fundraiser and donor, who's on trial for trafficking, and she was forced out of the party. So there's quite a bit that Carnahan brings to the race. I think Democrats think that they have a shot at this race if she's the candidate. Jeremy Munson is a current member of the State House. He's apparently going to run. And the DFL side a bit more open with Feehan out of the race. He came very close to winning the seat in 2018, less close in 2020.
Yeah, and without Feehan running in that race, it does make things a lot tougher for Democrats, being that even if you look at the partisan breakdown of that district, I believe it's more than a +10 Republican district or right around there. And Feehan, as you mentioned, came very close to winning in 2018 and still relatively close in 2020. Have there been any other rumblings among the Democratic Party in terms of who they might be trying to recruit, or is this largely going to be likely a very wide open race as we head into the endorsement and then the primary contest in August?
Well, another name that's arisen is Richard Painter, who has a huge kind of Twitter following or social media following because he was often a guest on cable news. He was a former GOP ethics counsel, and he was frequently a critic of President Donald Trump. I think because he'd been a Republican nominally anyway at one time. This kind of raised his profile, national profile with progressives who watch MSNBC. But he ran for U.S. Senate on the Democratic side, lost to Senator Smith in a primary. He talks a lot. I don't really know that. And he's also floated his name for other races. So I'm not really sure how serious he is. They've got some work to do trying to recruit somebody. There is a possibility for that district, especially in the long term, given the way Rochester is moving into the DFL column. But as of now, you can't beat somebody with nobody.
Well, we'll have to see how that race shakes out now that Feehan has announced he will not be seeking the Democratic nomination. We have been speaking with Patrick Coolican. He is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, latest in Minnesota news and politics. Make sure you visit minnesotareformer.com. Patrick, as always, appreciate the time today. Thanks for coming on.
Always a pleasure.
Let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.